The following podcast is part of the MindBodySpirit.fm podcast network.
All are welcome. We're glad you found us. Unity Online Radio. The voice of an awakening world.
Are you ready to create a life that's intentional and dynamic? Welcome to The Intentional Spirit with your host, Reverend Temple Hayes.
Welcome, everyone, and thank you so much for tuning in. Here we are in this wonderful season of life. This is like a part two series today. We've been addressing grief this year and how people cope with grief and how they process it, how they deal with loss. And I'm very tickled that today we have Sandy Cowan as our lead author, as the guest of our show. She's going to talk about her life experience and her tragic loss of her child. Sandy, welcome to the show. I'm so glad you're here. Not necessarily about the reasons that you're here, but I'm glad you're here on the intentional being and intentional living show today. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I'm delighted to be here as well.
Well, one of the things with all practicality that we wanted to have this radio show, The Intentional Spirit, is we wanted to really focus on a way of practical living and tools, which, you know, when people experience tragedy or challenge or whatever layer that may be, that they're able to take those experiences and turn them into ways to help others, ways to share life, ways to be a role model in whatever way. And I'm sure you didn't set out initially to be that, but that's what you certainly have become. So for the benefit of our audience, how did grief become a part of your life?
Well, I'll tell you, I slipped from shock, actually, to connectedness. So even though grief was a thread that ran through the loss of my son in the summer of 2018, it was running a parallel track with something else that was happening at the same time. So I tell many people this, honestly. I would still be in bed if I had not somehow connected immediately to my son when he passed. And we have stayed connected throughout his journey and mine, really. So that's sort of the deal. What I try to encourage people to be open to is when they lose a loved one, number one, they really aren't that far away. And number two, when they see signals or signs or think they hear something or think they see something, acknowledge it. Allow it to be, because it probably is.
And when did John die? What year was that?
It was 2.5 years ago, so it was the summer, mm-hmm. July of 2018. And he died. He was living with me here at the time, and when he didn't go to work that morning, I knocked on his door and called to him, and it just wasn't like him. He was out of the house quickly and off to work, and his room was eerily quiet. And when I opened the door, it just didn't look right. I mean, his arm was up, you know, and that was not normal. And I knew something was dreadfully wrong. But the interesting thing, Temple, what I said when I realized Sean had passed was I said, "You've gone." Mm. Isn't that odd? It's like, mm-hmm. it's like I knew somehow at some level there was a choice, and that it was a process. It wasn't a final. It was like you're physically gone. Do you know what I'm saying? I didn't mean mm-hmm. gone forever.
Mm-hmm.
And within, I would say probably an hour or two of that incident, it was at 8:30 in the morning, I heard him. I heard him in his transition, and he had no idea what had happened to him, was confused, was frightened, was he just didn't know. And I heard him calling out, not necessarily to me, just calling out, but because I connected with that, I felt very helpless. I mean, I had, however, I guess this is a sidebar deal, I had been sort of a reluctant medium for about 30 years. I didn't tell anybody. I had been hearing things and connecting and stuff with people. And I just kept notes on everything, wrote everything down, and just kept my mouth shut, basically.
May I ask, what were there any particular reasons? Because I think it's also poignant to people that are listening. You know, we have a lot of closeted people that are really gifted in this world, you know, yeah. that are invisible, but they have lots of gifts to share. Was there any particular reason or reasons as to why you were a quiet psychic or medium?
Well, it sort of came on me gradually and was prompted by illness. I was going a whole natural route with a series of autoimmune conditions, one of which was rheumatoid arthritis. It was very, very, very painful. And what I learned was when my mind was very still, pain was not quite as intense. When my mind was real busy, pain intensified. So over a period of months and then actually years, I trained myself to keep my mind still. I mean, totally still. And it's pretty much blank all the time, and I'm in the moment. And when you're like that, when you're not generating all that stuff, you can hear the whispers. And I began initially getting signals from spirits who were stuck, and I would send them over. I probably have done maybe about 1,500 of those. About three or four friends knew about that. But that was it. And then it graduated about, I don't know, 5 or 6 years into that, it graduated to where I heard I was taking care of an aunt who had dementia. She was getting near her time to leave, and some of the family came to me all at once and said, we want you to do these things to make her transition easier. And it was basically putting a little memory book together for her of real old family pictures, because her memory was way back there. And so I did that for Christmas, and so she could look at it and feel joyful because she thought those people were still here. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And it made her focus on happiness and love, and I think it made her transition easier. She was fearful with the dementia. So that was the first of the other messages that began coming. And, Lord, I just kept getting them. I don't know. So I didn't say anything. You know, I was a very professional, well-connected, socially involved, politically involved, community-wise involved. And I don't know. I guess I just didn't want to. I didn't know what to do with it in the first place. I wasn't going to hang out a shingle and charge. I didn't want to cheapen what I had. And I thought that is what I couldn't go from who I was to hanging out a medium sign in my front yard. Do you see what I'm saying? It was like one extreme to the other. So I just shut up. And then when John died, I couldn't keep it in anymore. The more he came to me, he was relentless, actually, prompting me to write this book. And he said, Mommy, you've got to tell people that they can connect too, and you've got to let them know it's not that challenging and that just start to be open. I always considered myself a little bit of a transitional voice. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't preach to the choir, but I do talk to beginners.
That I can't, I'm just kind of, you know, imagining what it would be like for a mom close to her son, and in those minutes, you know, knowing that, as your own words, you're gone to now you're talking to me. That's a whole lot of emotions going through a body at one time. That must have been some kind of resurrection there.
Well, you know, it was really, I thought about it, and the process was kind of like this. At first, when I heard him say, I don't know what happened, I'm so sorry, and then he wanted a mulligan. I mean, he wanted a do-over. And I just would talk, you know, just in general, I'd say, oh, honey, you know, you can't, this is it. And then I'd hear him be confused, and then he went away. So I never thought that I was connected. I never thought about anything. I just heard his confusion and fear. And then the next morning, I saw him. Well, didn't see him, actually. I saw him in my mind's eye. But first, I heard a knock on my bedroom door. And I'm the only one that lives in this house, so there weren't a lot of options here. But I was waking up. I heard a real knock. And I felt John's spirit walk in the door and sit where he would always sit in the chair. And he just looked stunned. And it wasn't really him. It was kind of a shadowy him. You know, and I could see it in my mind's eye, but I had my eyes squinted shut, and I didn't want to open them, Temple, because I didn't want him to go away. I wanted to hold on to that as long as I could, and I tried to talk him through the transition a little bit. I don't know whether I did any good or not, because after about 20 minutes, I guess, he just faded away, and then that night, I felt such a sense of peace. And I knew he was home. I knew he was where he was supposed to be. So a couple days later is when he came with the first message. So at each point, I never expected anything else. I never did anything but stay in the moment and try to help, you know, for when I was called to help, and didn't think much more about it. Once he started coming, I was just so grateful, and I knew it was real because I'd done this before. And besides, he's funnier than I am. So I couldn't make this stuff up.
I love that. I say that often. That's kind of like one of my sayings. It's like, you just can't make this stuff up.
No, you can't. You can't. Mm-mm. Mm-mm. And I asked him, you know, because the relationship, he'd come three or four or more times a month. And, you know, the first year and a half, it was almost all making amends. It was almost all soul cleansing. How sorry he was. He was kind of a little poop when he was, you know, for a number of years in our life. He was tough. And he just could not cleanse that enough. And finally, when all that kind of went away after about a year and a half, it's been more just real normal. I mean, he'll talk to me about something I might be doing that's significant for him, or answers questions that I have about the other side. And this is going to sound really weird, but after the book was written, and our hope was that the book would open up the possibility that people would feel, you know, maybe this could happen, or maybe this little butterfly I see hanging around really is my mom, you know, or it's her sending something to signal me, or maybe what I heard is him, that they can honor that, and that's a way of beginning to be connected. It benefits mm-hmm. them on the other side, too. This is not just for our healing. This is really for them, too.
Oh, yeah. I don't find anything weird about it. I think that's so beautiful. I was on a show a little bit earlier, not radio, but with another organization during the season for nonviolence, and we were talking about, you know, self-forgiveness and how, you know, it's so much work can be done with someone on the other side. You know, that was a question one of the audience members said is, can you still do the work? Absolutely. Sometimes you can do it, you know, even better. But I was saying that there was a statement that a friend of mine wrote that we can die twice. One is when the heart stops, and the other time is when people stop talking about us. And I thought that was a beautiful quote that she had written. And she, you know, not long ago died as well. But I find that incredible and such comfort when people can understand that veil is just really, really thin. And you can communicate. And my childhood friend, her husband died. And so she kind of awoken to this kind of thing, you know, and, you know, started reading about the possibilities. And so she told him, she said, well, I'm still upset with you because I've still lost that earring, you know, that you gave me for this particular anniversary. And a couple of days later, she was by her pool, and there was the earring laying right there on a brick. So these are, you know, like you said, you can't make this stuff up. And it's too real that you certainly can't deny it, you know?
No, and you know, we think we're so smart. we think we have all the answers for everything. Heck, we don't know anything. You know, I'm convinced of that. I quit making firm plans years ago. I'm led every day. And, you know, I make notes and kind of have an idea of what I want to accomplish. And if I do, wonderful. And if I don't, there's another day to make that happen, because sometimes life gets in the way. And John really caused a real detour. But I've got to tell you, the spirits that have come to me after this book have been... Because with me, they usually connect with electrical stuff, you know, mischief. And I'm not great with technology in the first place. So when I'm doing something on the computer and then every single file and folder on my desk open at the same time, I mean, it's disheartening. And when my TV goes on at 5 in the morning, and the light shines so bright it lights up the whole room through armoire doors. I mean, gosh, you know, so I always know when somebody is trying to contact. And they've said, many who have come have said that John's growth has been amazing, because he was actually able to communicate some of the things that he would have probably had to come back for an additional life to learn more deeply about, because there was dialogue involved. He could learn that without doing it all by himself in a closet. You see what I'm saying? There was the richness of relationship speeds up the process of soul growth. So maybe instead of, and I don't know, maybe some of your listeners believe in reincarnation, maybe some don't, but for those who do, instead of maybe coming back 50 times or 25 times, maybe you only have to come back 11, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There's
mm-hmm.
a huge, huge benefit. So lots of people over there are giving me attagirls and encouraging.
Oh, yeah. I can't imagine anyone in 2021 not believing in reincarnation. But, you know, that's a different talk for a different day, as we would say. But, I mean, how could you, with all the information and everything we know and we've seen and all that, you know, how could you not, or the children that are being born now that tell you who they used to be, or the prodigies, you know, of a child that's 4 years old that can play a piano of somebody that's from another incarnation. It's like undeniable. I don't even know sometimes if it's that we really think we're that smart or we're just closed-minded. You know, I think it was Alvin Toffler that said that, you know, the issue of this century is not about learning, it's about unlearning. You know, I'm paraphrasing, but it's unlearning that we have bought into these little bitty boxes, you know, instead of this real huge, big world, you know, filled with potential. And I love that your son's a co-author and he's on the other side.
Yes,
I'm talking with Sandy Cowan. You can go to her website, Sandy Cowan, CoWen.com. You can read all about her and her book. It's available right now. It's called Hi Mama, It's Me. And that's how souls stay connected forever, and the power of undying love, about her journey with her son. It's just a beautiful story, and I would urge you to get involved. And I love your endorsements, you know, Larry Dossey and the Foundation for Living Medicine and the founding board of Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. You know, she's a hero. That's for sure. And and with Wayne Dyer, did Wayne Dyer communicate with you from beyond? Or I'm like,
yes.
I got to know that, because
he's been
passed a while, hasn't he?
Yeah. I have to tell you, he's come three or four times. And
good.
I think met him maybe once at a conference 100 years ago, but I was shocked when he came, because I didn't really know him. And he was prompting me to ask Larry Dossey to endorse the book. And he said to me to be sure to tell him. So I had met Larry Dossey. So when I sent a note to him, I explained about the book, sent him the synopsis and everything, and then said, you know, because I happened to do this, Wayne came and blah, blah, blah. And, he just didn't bat an eye, you know. I mean, it was absolutely, and he said, you know, next time you talk to Wayne, tell him hi. You know, it's kind of like you just make a phone call.
That is hysterical.
But he said wonderful things about, Wayne said wonderful things about the book. And then he said to me, I said, do you mind if I use this? And you know, Temple, I don't ask for people to come to me. I don't solicit, because I think that invites mischief sometimes. I wait till they come. If they want me, they know where to find me. So
right.
When he came again, I said, do you mind if I quote? He said, no. He said, I want to get credit. It's a good quote. So I put him on the website. But you notice, he's in italics.
Yes, I did.
Yes, I did.
I mean, intuitively, I knew that was from another. It was from the afterlife, but I couldn't wait to hear the story. It's like, okay, I love it. I absolutely love it. It's so cool. And when was the first time he came through, or did you go, this can't be you, or did you go, hi Wayne, good to see you?
No. I never know who it is.
Right.
Okay. I know it's somebody. And then I go through a process, you know, is God always gets first dibs. So I ask if it's God first. And then I go to the Ascended Master group, you know, I ask about Jesus, or whether it's Mary or whomever. And and if I'm getting no's, then I go to angels and guides and no, and I get to friends and family. And when it's not family, it's friends, or these people would all be considered friends. And I go to male or female generally first, but then if I don't see right away who it is, then I have to go through, you know, are you a writer? Are you spiritual? Are you in the arts? Are you science? Are you, you know, categorically to try to hone it down, because I have no idea. who's coming. And once I get way down the path there a little bit, sometimes their face will just show up to me. I'll see who it is. But I've had very bizarre ones. And I think my next book will probably be because each of them either share a lesson that was really important in their life. Jimi Hendrix comes to mind because I have a blog on him. That's on my website. It's a funny story about him. But like 50-some years later, he shows up. And it wasn't because of our brief interaction or stories I tell about him. It was about his regret and how he wished he had not lived with such excess. He explained what the excess was and why he burned out at 27. And he said, just think of the impact I could have made with young black boys with the guitar, especially electric. He said, there just aren't any. You see, so they all have one, either lessons they've learned or things they want to share. And a lot of them, then they're big names. And I said, you know, this is, you know, it's like you do a regression and you're Cleopatra. Everybody expects you know, to be the
I sure am glad
person.
You came out of the closet. I'm talking with Sandy Cowan today. You can join me at templehaze.com or firstunity.org. Love to stay in touch with you. And we'll be right back for more of this beautiful conversation with Sandy. Thank you for being with us.
You're listening to Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Welcome back to The Intentional Spirit with Reverend Temple Hayes.
Okay. And welcome back, everyone, and thank you so much for being here. We are definitely talking to an intentional spirit today, that woman that had been hiding as a medium for over 30 years, and her son's death, tragic death, 2.5 years ago, John, awakened her reality as he immediately started communicating with her. Sandy Cowan, I'm so glad you're here. And it's so interesting in my heart. I feel like I've talked to you many, many times. And no, I don't say that to everybody, but I definitely feel that familiarity with you. So before we went on break, and we're drawing from your website, sandycowan.com, we were talking about how that you've had all different kind of people, you know, want to take up space in your life. And, you know, Wayne Dyer is one of them. He even gave you an endorsement from the other side and connected you with Larry Dossey. But you were mentioning Cleopatra. So tell us some of those stories. That's really, really cool. I think that's the reason probably is because you are so humble and you're not full of yourself, you know. So don't be shy. Don't hold anything back, okay?
Well, I won't. And in fact, okay, the Cleopatra reference was to make the extreme, ridiculous comparison. Because you know how when people have a past life regression or something, and then they're disappointed if they weren't Cleopatra, or they weren't King Henry VIII, or they weren't somebody famous. Everybody thinks they have to be famous. So when all of these famous people came, I really got embarrassed. I mean, I really got embarrassed. So to one of them early on, I said, you know, I'm really embarrassed by this because people might think that I'm just being braggy or I'm being funny with all these names, and you got to help me. And they said, well, here's the deal. And I think it was Henry Ford, actually, who said this. He said, you know, my life path, and well, I'm paraphrasing exactly, but my life path and the things I've learned and all of that are probably very similar to many, many, many other people. You know, a guy like Fred Smith in Philadelphia. And he said, but if Fred Smith in Philadelphia came to you, Sandy, and wanted you to share information that would help people, and you did, who would care? I mean, nobody cares. Mm-hmm. So he said, but if I share, they will. They'll listen. So he said, that's why a lot of us are stepping up, because we know people will pay attention to us. And we do have a lot to say. So, so I gladly, my goodness, I've got them from Edith Piaf, if you can imagine, I adored her, to Esther Williams. Who even wants Esther Williams to channel her? I mean, who wants her to visit? Mm-hmm. Nobody.
Esther Williams share some things with us? What did Esther Williams? Did anything particular that stood out for you?
No, I don't remember exactly what hers was, because I've had, 350 come, but of the big names, I'd guess maybe 40 so far. Mm-hmm. And some are very, very funny, and some come on a topic. So, for example, I'm just doing a blog now because Walter Cronkite actually came twice about the same thing.
I miss him.
Wasn't he wonderful?
I was just talking about him yesterday, actually, I believe. Yeah, I was talking about how that was when the news was thorough and fun, or had more depth and meaning. What a guy. So he's been through a couple of times. Did he tell you anything that you recall that stood out?
Yes, actually, and I have his thing here because I was just doing a blog on it. And the two things that were particularly important, he talks about how sad journalism is today because it's so sensational. And back in the day, newscasters and reporters and anchors, some of them were revered. I mean, and they all had biases, for goodness sake, because they were human beings. But they were so proud of the fact that nobody knew what side of the fence they were on, And mm-hmm. they were proud of that. Today, nobody cares, and they're advocates, and they talk and over the top of guests.
Well, they sell drama and trash. That's the difference. I mean, Walter Cronkite and others at that time, they sold hope. There was tragedy, but there was triumph. There was sadness, but there was joy. It was a balance. Now it's, how horrific can it be? And, the drama and the fight and the divide. And we're just bombarded with all this stupidity, which doesn't really reflect who we are at all. It's a very small population on the planet that even reflects what they promote all the time. It's just a trip.
Well, and what he talked about was how the news, they were so dignified and respected and in some cases revered. And then he went on to say, and by the way, when I get these messages, I write every single word. I don't fill in the blanks. A lot of mediums, they'll see a picture or they'll get a couple words and then they interpret. I do no interpret. This is to me, it's sacred work. I don't want to lose a nuance of what they were trying to say. So he said, now they're like carnival barkers, one out sensationalizing the other. But the cute thing that I wanted to share, when I was a little girl, about 9 years old, I think, we made a me book in school and had me on the front of it. And then inside, we drew a picture of our family. We drew a picture of our pet and of our house. And then what we were going to be when we grew up. And I drew a woman. Now, I lived in a small, teeny town in Illinois, farming community. And I wanted to be, the woman was in a suit and she had a pad and pencil with her. I wanted to be a reporter like Lorelei Kilbourne. I don't even remember where Lorelai Kilbourne came from, but I have never forgotten her name because that's who I wanted to be like. Well, he reminds me, I ended up, by the way, being in the advertising PR business, so it was kind of related, but I was never a journalist. But he said, remember, Sandy, as a little girl, you wanted to be a reporter like Lorelai Kilbourne, huh? Now look at you, reporting the big stuff. he said, this assignment, kiddo, is not for sissies. And then in quotes, he said, shoot the messenger, remember? So write and duck. Yeah, so what do you think of that?
Well, and the interesting thing is it sounds, you can hear him say that, actually.
Absolutely. And some of them, their personality really comes through. Mahatma Gandhi was a gentle, different kind of a voice, and some are really Barry Goldwater was very irreverent, and it was very funny because he, you know, he just basically said, and I shouldn't say this on Unity Radio, but he basically said, don't let the bastards get you down, you know. Mm-hmm. But that's exactly mm-hmm. more like his style.
Absolutely. And, that's how he would have been, you know, how he was, not how he would have been, how he is.
How he is in that space.
Now Gandhi, now he's one of my mentors. So that's I love him. For sure.
You know, I think the next book will probably be All of Those Voices. I think
that would be a great book.
Mm-hmm. Because everyone, they're not just rambling. You know, I mean, they're all, and sometimes I have no idea what they're saying because I'll write. The same with John when he comes. And sometimes in my mind, subconscious or something, I'm saying to myself, I'm not sure this makes sense, you know, but I just keep feverishly writing. And it'll be 3 or 4 or 5 or as many as 8 handwritten pages that I'm writing. And then when I get to the end, I go back and read it, and I am always shocked. There is a nugget of brilliance or beauty in it that... I'm just not that good, you know? It never could happen with me. So I don't doubt a bit where this stuff is coming from. I don't doubt it a bit.
Well, you definitely have, you know, allowed such a space for these energetic beings to come through. And it sounds like word's gotten around.
Oh, it is. John uh-huh. John came the other day. Now, he comes a little less frequently. I'd say maybe 2 or 3 times a month instead of maybe 3 or 4 plus. And he said, now I'm going to let you go before your hand gets too tired, because he said there's somebody else waiting. And then he said, take a number, you know, really. That's funny.
I love that. And so for the people tuning in and they go, this book, you know, hi, Mama, it's me, sounds very interesting. Tell us some of the, what you would consider, you know, a couple of the teasing nuggets that give us a little bit more as to why this book is important. I think we've covered the obvious aspects of it, but from your heart, why do you feel it's important?
There are a couple things that I think people would be fascinated by. I asked John if he had seen Jesus. And my son was not particularly religious, but he said to me, yes, I've seen him, but it's not about that for me now. He's really doing a lot of work on himself, and he says, I can see him, and I can, like, bump into him. I don't know, you know, I'm making an odd analogy here. Mm-hmm. But he said, honestly, Mom, he said, my frequency, even up here, is not quite high enough to hang with the big dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And when he said it, I thought, oh my gosh, John, that's so sacrilegious almost. I thought, everybody has loved it. They all refer to it, you know, when they come to me. Nobody thought anything bad about it at all. But your frequency does raise the more pure the soul is in love,
mm-hmm.
even over there. And then when you get to the place where we're more like God intended us to be, where that's that pure, unconditional love state, non-judgmental in the moment, then, you know, you don't have to necessarily come back, you know, and you can hang with the big dogs. So that was fascinating to me. The other thing that I thought was real important is so many came in the book, and I shared what heaven was like. And I think there's a quote in the Bible, and I am certainly not a Bible student, but there's something about in my father's house, there are many mansions.
Mm-hmm. Many mansions is talking about mm-hmm. the afterlife. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I know that probably has different interpretations, but John talks about the different stages of reflection and stuff that happens there. He also talks about his particular heaven. So others, I've probably got about five or six other quotes from people who talk about their particular heaven as well. So you have not only the traditional stereotypical angels and peace and, you know, just overwhelming. Well, the overwhelming love is throughout everything there, but, you know, the typical kind of heaven. But then you can go to the place where your life's, where your passion was. And for some, it's animals. For some, it's nature. And one of my friends said, the leaves on the plants are as thick as your index finger. I mean, it was like nature on steroids.
Mm-hmm.
That so lush and magnificent. And another who was a big game hunter and very accomplished world-class fisherman and all that, he adored animals, and he said that he was seeing all the most beautiful animals in the world, he said, present and extinct.
Mm-hmm.
Which I thought was astounding, because there really is no time there.
Right, right, right.
So
it's all one time.
All.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And my son is playing golf everywhere. Of course, you don't actually swing the club, but it's an energetic thing where you see the beauty and you feel the experience. And you know what I'm saying? It's an emotional experience.
Sure, absolutely.
So a lot of that,
you know,
is
one revealed. Of the things I wanted to talk to you about, Sandy, is or it's coming up with me to talk about that I've always found interesting, because in all the years I've done memorials and funerals and, you know, all those kind of things, and I certainly have had many encounters with people on the other, you know, side, and people that communicate, and, you know, all of this stuff is just very easy to accept from life experiences and things like that. My mother-in-law that she was missing, she was a silver alert, and the rainbows came in the kitchen, and she said, Temple, I'm already gone. You know, so I get all that in that space. But what I find interesting is a number of things that, well, I'll just pick two. One is that, you know, people still say, you know, rest in peace, where it's like, if anybody ever stopped to think about that, you know, they're not really resting. They're working, they're engaged, they're involved. They do projects, they sign up for teams, they teach children on the other side, or, you know, whatever. So I've always found that, like, when do people stop saying rest in peace? They're not resting, they're not sleeping. They're actually very engaged and involved. So that's one thing. And the other thing that I've always found fascinating is that, let's say, for sake of this story, a man and woman have been married. Their religiosity says, you know, it's wrong to divorce. And you could never explain, or the children could never explain, you know, why they even stayed together. You know, they had not very little in common. They argued all the time, et cetera, et cetera. And so, you know, mom dies first. And then a few years later, dad dies. And people start saying, oh, how wonderful. You know, they're finally, that's not the first thing they say, but probably the third or fourth thing. Oh, how beautiful. You know, their mom and dad are in heaven together and they're just having the most wonderful time. I don't see that. And I don't believe that because the vibration wouldn't align because it didn't even align on this planet of being a human being. What am I missing?
No, I don't think you're missing anything. And I will tell you probably the antithesis of that, but making the similar point, is that once you can bump into somebody in your life one time, have an extraordinary connection, and then they're out of your life. I mean, you don't even, it may have been quick, it may have been accidental, it doesn't have to have been physical, it can just be a connection, but you felt something, you see? I don't think that goes away either, and I think those connections are stronger than the ones that you force through life here because somebody told you you should, and those are the ones that you probably will return with in another way because they're closer to you. Do you see what I'm saying? You'll
Oh, yeah. I've had that happen recently. Yeah, where you just, you're like your whole soul, you just smile. Like, oh my gosh, I've been waiting to meet you all my life, you know, and it's just this wide opening, you know, and it's not necessarily reciprocated, you know, but it affects and impacts you, you know, for sure. Yeah. And that awakening continues, you know, the broader, bigger, more in-depth person that you are, even though the person is controlling, you know, what it can be or can't be, where you're like, here I am, let's play, you know.
The other point that is made in the book a little bit is how not to judge. We can't judge other people, their behavior or any, we have no idea what their path is. Mm-mm. And one pair of souls, a man and wife actually, that I talk about in the book. I always use first names. I don't, and they're accurate, but I don't use last names. And Marcia, who came to me, died probably earlier than she should because she had two devastating things happen in her life within a year or so apart, a couple years apart. And it was just too much. You know, she was about my age. And I think on a subconscious level, she said, I can't take this anymore. I went out of here. Well, her body gave her bone cancer and she was gone in a year and a half. So I believe those things can happen too if we, at a core level, will ourselves to pass. But she left and her husband's behavior was actually the trigger that sent her over. So when he came to me, in this part's in the book as well, he came to me and said, he had a pretty good life actually, and he said, you know, the hardest thing was, he said, I wouldn't have done anything different in my life, but he said the hardest thing was knowing everybody, all my friends hated me for what I had done. And he said, but I had to be the trigger for Marcia. See, that was part of his path.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, but she instantly forgave me when I was here. Instantly. It was just instant. And so I'm very quick not to judge. I love every person I meet instantly. And then I might not like them. I might not decide to hang around with them. But I do love them. And that's at a different level. You know what I'm saying? So I think if we can get closer to that, I think we'd all be a heck of a lot better off.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. How has this work in the last two or three years, you know, and you're being more out there? How has it changed you?
It's definitely made me more gentle, a lot more loving. I mean, I'm I have a routine every morning, so I'm half an hour to an hour in meditation, and it's not a formal meditation. I do it in bed. I do it getting up. But, you know, it's like that. I read Jesus Calling for me every morning. I ask for the Holy Spirit's guidance, and then my mind is blank, and I live in gratitude, and it's a little odd because at this stage of my life, I have to continue to work. I have to earn money, and I just can't make myself do it with the work this part of my life. So trying to, like, weave work into this is really delicate, and I haven't exactly figured out how to do it, but I have to at some point. Otherwise, I have to go get married.
Oh, the adventures we live in, right?
Yes, that's right.
That is too funny.
So it's changed my life in that I really don't want to play here. I really would really play over there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's if I have a preference, so I don't mind living alone. I don't mind being 25 miles from all my friends. I don't mind seeing people less frequently. Well, COVID forces a little of that anyway. But, yeah, I mean, I'm very content.
Yeah, well, you've got a lot of people living in your heart, you know, and they're waiting in line. You know, you're like a Disney on steroids. You're going to have to start offering people the quick pass.
Yes, where you punch a thing and you get a frequency mm-hmm. discount. Yeah, but it's kind of like Christmas every day because I never know, mm-hmm. you know.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they don't come every day, but it's pretty often. So,
my life is not boring.
It's
just beautiful, right? It's the realm of mysticism. You know, it's like one of my, you know, morning awakening affirmations is, oh, I'm so excited, God, I get to be you today. You know, I'm so excited about the mystery we call life, of just what could come in, you know, what's going to happen, what reveals itself, you know, what space. I mean, it's that part of that, like you're talking about, that level of openness, you know, the preciousness of the heart. Everyone, we've been talking to Sandy Cowan today. Now you already know that she's just, you got to know her. SandyCowan.com and her book, Hi Mama, It's Me, that was written through the tragedy of her son. I'm Temple Hayes. I love being with all of you. I love it when you contact us and let us know about being on the show, and join us at firstunity.org, and you can step into more of the work that we do here in the world. And thank you for your support, your ongoing support for Unity Online Radio. We really appreciate it. Goodbye, everyone. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening. This is Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Hi, I'm Jane Asher, and I believe, and from what I've been shown, that when our loved ones die, they don't really leave. They just slip into the next room. On my podcast, I explore the bigger picture surrounding life on Earth, and what follows when we do die. I speak with authors, friends, transition specialists, and other experts about every facet of death, dying, grief, hospice care, cultural traditions, and also our beliefs about that final journey and what we may end up facing. Please join me on The Next Room on the MindBodySpirit.fm podcast network or wherever you get your podcasts.